Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and it's good to have you here. Let me introduce the panel, and we'll get started. We're getting everybody in this morning. Apparently, there was some kind of screw up. I don't know what happened, but people didn't get the stories that I usually send out, and then assumed they weren't on the show, so they left. So we have to go find them, and then as soon as we find them, they'll come back. Okay. All right. We're on the lookout for one of our panelists who escaped. Okay. Let me introduce the ones that I know we have in front of us. Alan Chartok.
Hello. Sir. Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. We gave out a lot of candy last night.
Oh, good. Did you count how many pieces? Or?
Yeah. I think it was something like 650 pieces.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's at home or here?
Yeah, at home.
At home.
Individual pieces.
Individual pieces. Wow.
And the kids look great.
Yeah, they're really cute, aren't they? They're very good. Ira Fussfeld is here, the Daily Freeman Publisher Emeritus. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, I'm not sure that it shows the eagerness with which I love being here that I answered your call on short notice, or the fact that I have no life and I answered your call on short notice. It could be a little of both.
Self-deprecation is the height of humor.
And then look who's in town. We're very excited that former Albany County Common Council President Helen DeFossis is with us. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to be here.
You're so distinguished, and you are anything but common.
That's true.
That's true. Now, I thought, so Judy Patrick was going to be here. She was in the building 2 seconds ago. Did we lose her on the streets?
We have somebody going out to the parking lot to see if she's escaped yet.
Okay.
And I see people walking by, but I don't see her.
I don't see her. Yeah.
She escaped.
We had a little, because I almost didn't show up except I had to do the media project. We had a little miscommunication last night.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
Maybe if she hears us on the air, she'll...
Maybe, yeah, because with Judy, we're waiting for you. We're expecting you. We wanted you here. We need you. All right. Well,
not to say that the three of us and plus Joe can't handle it flawlessly.
I'm sure. Yeah, because God knows this show's been flawless so far. but let's get started with what's going on in the news and find out what you... make of all of this stuff. Of course, the big story is having to do with, there's two big stories. I mean, the one overall story, of course, is the midterms, which is just a few days away, 5 days away, 5 days left. And the latest polls, according to the New York Times, showing ominous results for Republican House candidates is how they are describing it. I think we touched on this yesterday, although I don't think we did talk about it a whole bunch. But I, for one, seeing Nancy Pelosi on the Colbert Report declaring victory, I found to be very disturbing.
I would say.
Given what we have gone through over the last 2 years, I don't know how wise a move that was, but there you go.
It's predictable, Joe. And the reason that she does it, I think, is because people like to be with the winner. So if she says, we're going to win, there will be a number of people who will join and say, okay, I want to be with the winner. It's, what do they call that? This? The bandwagon effect.
The bandwagon effect. But given that most races, wild cards, let me check that. In many races, wild cards remain. We don't know anything for sure. And polling is all over the place. And even in races where the polling has gotten better for the Democratic candidates, let's say in the 19th district, it's certainly not a sure bet. They're still very, very close. They're within the margin of error. They're within. They have not factored in completely the undecideds. So I don't know how you. I understand, you know, wanting to say we feel confident, but
yeah, that's different than what she said.
That's much different than what you said.
I just don't understand it. I don't understand. These are supposedly smart people, and then they make statements like this, and you say, well, I guess they're not that smart.
So every day you got Democratic candidates saying, you know, if I get elected, I'm not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi. That's got to hurt a little bit if you're the leader and you think you've done a very good job. And you may say things that are not all that smart. Trump does it all the time. You know, there's I've always had a theory, and it's a theory that is upsetting to me. And that is that people don't like to get fired, right? Can we all agree that?
I'd agree.
Nobody likes to be fired.
Unless they have a good severance package.
Yeah, but what I'm saying here is an awful lot of Republican congressmen, incumbents, have to be beaten in order to win the House. So, you have to beat like 30 of them in order to win the House. And so if that's the case, there will be people who say, you know, he's the congressman. I wouldn't want to be fired as the lathe operator. And I know he doesn't want to be fired or she doesn't want to be fired, as the incumbent congressperson. You know, John Faso said something to me yesterday that was very interesting. We were sitting there talking and he said, you know, if Hillary had been the president, elected president, I would have walked into this seat.
Oh, that's true.
Isn't that interesting?
That's true.
And so now this whole thing has become a. they caught Judy
they
in the
found
parking
you
lot.
On the sidewalk.
Yeah. Did you make it to the toll plaza yet, or were you just?
You know, I'm not. I'm a country driver, not a city driver. So it took me a long time to figure out how to turn around.
Okay, all
I
right.
thought you were going to say streets. A long time to figure out how to turn the car on.
Oh, yeah,
and certainly is my case in my car.
It's good to have you. Apparently, the email that I sent out last night didn't reach anybody.
I didn't get it.
Yeah. Okay. So there we go.
I didn't get the memo.
But, you know, in terms of the bandwagon effect we're talking about,
welcome.
I think Trump has a really strange relationship to this midterm election result. He wants them to win, and I think massing all these troops to stop the caravan is part of the optics that he's trying to generate in order to make sure that the Republicans win. But on the other hand, he's afraid that a lot of them are going to lose, and it's going to be blamed on him.
Yeah.
So he keeps making these announcements, you know, if any, people lose, it's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
I've been a good president, and if they haven't been good in their own campaigns, that's not my fault.
Into all of this comes the Paul Ryan issue. So now Paul Ryan dares to criticize this guy whose butt he's been kissing all along, and Trump characteristically turns around and lets him have it, showing that there is no Trump loyalty towards anybody. Now, do I feel sorry for Paul Ryan? I do not. On the other hand, it is interesting.
Well, in the Washington world, I mean, for Trump to be Ryan to be rearing his head after a long time of really playing the quiet game since he's been back says a lot. I mean, people are really paying attention to the fact that.
But he's also on the way out.
On the way out, and which, of course, people are wondering why he hasn't been talking more and louder.
Well, because there are a lot of
talking now.
Because there are a lot of us who believe that he wants to be president of the United States, and so every time he plays a card, you wonder whether or not this is a strategic move to move him ahead.
So let's expand on this a little bit. Trump is saying often, if we don't win, don't blame me.
Don't blame me.
On the other hand, he's going around at these rallies saying, it's like I'm on the ballot.
Yes.
Vote for me.
That's right.
So which one is it?
Okay, but Ira, think about it this way. And I know Helen's going to, I think, second this. And that is, if he wins, he's going to then claim full credit for the win.
But also expect that if they lose, he's going to start alleging voter fraud, manipulation at the ballots. That will come up if the Republicans lose big time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I'm a half a glass half empty kind of guy, and if the election goes the way it appears to be going, with the Democrats winning the House handily, winning some governor seats, maybe winning the Senate, but probably not. The next 2 years are going to be worse than the last 2 years in terms of the rhetoric, in terms of the vitriol, and in terms of the divisiveness.
Certainly if it's just the House, right? I mean, that would be.
If Trump is actually going to run for reelection, which I believe he won't, but if he does.
Which I believe he will.
I believe he will. But my sister, who's a Republican, thinks he'll run, but he won't win. She said he's not a real Republican. Well, he gave us what we wanted, all those tax cuts, and now we don't need him anymore.
Right. Well, that's why the next 2 years, if he decides to run, are going to be worse than the last two. Because if he's running, he's going to be really out there trying to convince people that he's the guy.
Now, he said last night that he was going to run in 2020, but again, he just said that. Sure. I don't know if that's true
or not. Helen, with all due respect to your sister, who I'm sure is wonderful, 90% of the Republican Party are adamantly supporting Trump, and they don't move off the dime. So that while she may say that, and that is a favorite theory that I have heard other people say, they got the Supreme Court that they wanted, they got the other thing, these people haven't got the guts to come out against him or to run against him in a primary.
But if those 90%, if every last one of them votes for Trump next time, and he doesn't get independents the way he got them in 2 years ago, and the Democrats remain as motivated as they are now, he's not going to win.
Well, right you are, Ira, but if you've been listening to National Public Radio lately, which I do, now and then.
That would be NPR.
NPR. You hear the interviews that they've been doing with a so-called man or woman on the street. You would think that Trump was going to win an overwhelming victory. I don't understand what the heck they're doing, but maybe they're covering their own keisters. I just don't get it.
We discussed this issue at length, by the way, in this week's Media Project, which you can hear on Sunday.
That's right, and which Rex took violent disagreement with me on that.
I never got a call. In my entire career, I've gotten one call as a man on the street, woman on the street type call where somebody wanted to ask me questions about my political views. So I got all excited as a political scientist. I said, this is going to be exciting. And the guy said, well, before I ask you any questions, what's your highest level of education? And I said, I have a PhD. And he said,
Sorry.
We can't talk to you. You don't stand for anybody.
You know, as someone who used to do these man on the streets as a reporter, and you'd go out and you just anybody that would talk to you, you would go to train stations because people were hanging around with nothing else to do but talk to you. But people are really too busy to talk to a reporter, and they definitely, a lot of them, don't want to give their name and let the newspaper publish how they feel about politics.
You can always, that's great, Judy, and you know, you can always. You can always figure that MOS is men on the street, or WOS is women on the street, to make a point. I always say to my Legislative Gazette students, go stand in front of the Legislative Office Building and ask the first 100 people who pass who the lieutenant governor of the state of New York is. And, you know, what you're going to get is close to zero.
But make no mistake, when a newspaper does a man on the street about a national issue, its motivation is simply to get a local story, to localize the newspaper with a local angle.
It's
the desire to be scientific or overly analytic is, in my experience, non-existent.
Well, at least, though, people are trying to make politics relevant to the local reader in a way that they don't seem to be relevant.
Right, but the reason, of course, is not out of goodwill, but out of survival.
Yeah, I don't care about
you need local
goodwill,
newspapers. Well, it's nice if you can say you did something right and it had a financial
that
benefit.
Was nice. As long as they do it, the bottom line is important, I think. So,
but obviously, the polls are one thing, men on the street is another thing. But we'll find out election results on Tuesday and see where we are. Meanwhile, the one thing that the president said yesterday that the words that I thought when in talking about while. Comparatively to Nancy Pelosi getting on Colbert and saying, you know, claiming victory, we had the president yesterday on his way to a rally in Florida and saying that, you know, there's a lot of people in the House. Do you feel confident you're winning the House? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of people.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
But there's a lot of people.
One of his go-to lines.
That's
yeah.
Right.
And yes, there are a lot of people, but we know that. But and also the schedule seems to indicate that they're putting much more looking to try to support as many Senate candidates as they possibly can right now, given his schedule over the next.
But you know, Joe,
4 or 5 days.
President Trump has found a political posture that works, right? He came in on the politics of fear against Muslims. It won for him. Now there's a midterm election. He's playing that again against Hispanics and the caravan and all of that. He knows that rap, and he does it very well, and he does it with great fanfare. And all those troops that he's sending down now to the border,
if
which
he
are
winds
going,
up sending them down,
well, yeah, I don't
just
know.
Just be a lot he's of baloney.
I don't know. It's pretty hard to anticipate what he might do.
Yeah. It'll cost $1 billion, by the way, at least $1 billion to do it.
To do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your point?
My point is he has, in the words of the McCarthy anti-McCarthy lawyer, Joseph Welch, he has no shame.
Yeah.
15,000. I mean, does that number come out of the top? Like, was that, how do we come to that number? And 10 to 15, which is, you know, the variable there, of course, is the amount of the original troops that were going to be sent down. Although I believe it was 800 prior to that. The two numbers I find fascinating is that equals or almost equal to the troops that we have in Afghanistan currently. It is, I think, 2,000 more than the total border agents that we have in this country. And also, as of yesterday, there were some 3,800 to 4,000 that were part of the immigrants making their way to this this country, which was expected to drastically be reduced down to under 2,000 by the time they make.
So win or lose, he's not going to do it. He's this is just a throw this up against the wall gambit before the election, and the day after the election, Hill will say, because I threatened it, the caravan thinned out, and my threat worked, and we're not going to send them. He's not going to send. I mean, where's Mattis on this? What the Secretary of Defense has got to be saying to him? No, man, this is just ridiculous. It's too
expensive really tough
and unnecessary.
Mattis, you can imagine.
Well, that's
oh
what made
God.
Him Mad Dog. Even if he wasn't already Mad Dog, now he's mad.
And people are asking, isn't there a better use for these troops? Couldn't they be helping, you know, the U.S. territory that got hit by that incredible typhoon last week?
Well, and even, of course, people are saying, you didn't even do this for Puerto Rico when we were having our problems. And we have to take a break. But the other thing, of course, is with the troops is that veteran groups are starting to speak out and saying that they don't like.
Well, is it even legal?
Well, that's the other question. Yeah, if it's even legal. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have your letters. We welcome them, panel at WAMC.org. We've got everybody in place now, so we'll do a show. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Helen DeFossis, Ira Fussfeld, and Judy Patrick. And Helen, we were trying to get everybody under wraps here, but how have you been? You're still in D.C. area.
Yes, I live in Alexandria, Virginia, which is a very Democratic town. And in fact, we have a little organization called Democrats to Go, where we farm ourselves out to Democrats in towns where they really need help. Mm-hmm. So I'm a member of the Alexandria Democratic Committee, and you are who you are. No matter where you live, you just show up and do the same things. I teach at the Lifelong Learning Institute at George Mason. I teach politics and policy, and I'm giving a big lecture next week on what happened in the 2018 election. So I'm hoping to get wisdom from all of you today about what to say next week.
I don't want to blow my own horn, but I'll be on that. I think that Thursday night speaking on a panel at Williams on the same
thing. Say it on the same thing? Like, what happened? It's either what happened or what happened. I mean, we could get some big surprises.
Oh, absolutely. We certainly could.
We don't know.
A must listen is your roundtable the day after.
The day after. And we'll be talking about what happened or what happened.
What happened? That's right. I know.
And the roundtable the next day, are you doing state? Results as well as national.
We'll do everything.
Okay.
We'll talk about whatever's relevant.
At least one relevancy would be, Judy, now that you raise it, is whether the state Senate will go Republican, which would make a huge difference. Theoretically, it'd make a huge difference in New York State. You never know, because the Assembly goes along, as we all know, passing all these bills because they know that the Republican Senate will say no. but what happens if the Republican Senate turns Democratic? Will that continue to happen?
I just heard a commercial by Jim Tedisco running for re-election as a Republican in the state Senate, arguing that it was important for the Senate to remain Republican so you wouldn't have one-party rule.
Right, right. That's, well, they're playing that card very well.
And what's the smart money say? Is it likely to happen?
It's coming down to a couple of nickels being rubbed together. Yeah, it's close. No, it's close.
It's tough. It's tough. You don't really know.
Let's go to some letters, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Thank you, Joe. Deanne says, good morning. It seems like whenever I listen to NPR, they are interviewing people who are going to vote Republican and stand behind Trump. Am I just listening at the wrong time, or are they favoring Republicans? Now, we duked this out, right?
Did you write that letter, Alan?
I did not. We duked this out. It was me versus my erstwhile good friend, Rex Smith.
Although you
would not have known it at this particular juncture. And he said, no, they've been playing it very fair. And I said, well, every time I turn it on, they're interviewing somebody, and they are always going to vote for Trump.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just positing a theory, yeah, which is it that, which it very well may be, or is it because, given the demographics typically of NPR, that they are trying to show another side / give an idea of what is happening in the interior of this country, which the news media was accused of ignoring, right, in the 2016 election?
So I love what you just said, Joe, because you're exactly right. Not only what are they doing, but why are they doing it? So if, in fact, they keep coming up with these people and their personal profiles who are going to vote for Republican and vote for Trump and who like what Trump is doing, even though some of these interviews are inane, one wonders whether they're just trying to protect their money or whether they are afraid that this is going to come out wrong from their perspective. So I don't know. You make a very good point.
I think a lot is shifting in Washington now. You know, I mean, Democrats want to make sure that they're covering more than you know what, because the political nature of life down there is really in flux.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you've got obviously a very angry kind of one or two note president. You've got a lot of powerful Democrats, and they're trying to hold their own.
Yeah, well, you say that, but I don't see it. In other words, I wish I could say to you, and I know you're a powerful advocate for Democrats, but I don't see it. I don't see any emerging leadership among the Democrats who are taking on Trump in the way that Trump is taking on the Democrats. So, for example, I don't think my friend Chuck Schumer, who I really like, is doing a good job of presenting that. In fact, I think he's agreed with Trump more than I would like to see him doing. So who you got?
Well, there has been a game of, what is it called, After You, Alphonse, you know,
yeah,
where the Democrats will wait for the Republicans to challenge him first. And I noticed that in the Pittsburgh situation, on that very, very sad tragedy,
yeah, sure,
at the synagogue, right,
yeah,
that
sure,
Schumer didn't go. I think Paul Ryan didn't go. You know, they thought that was a statement and a display on their parts of a principled reaction that the president wasn't willing to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I agree with you that there are minor steps being taken. And the Democrats, speaking as one, we don't really have the next generation of leaders. We don't have them yet. So there's a jockeying going on, but it's a behind-the-scenes jockeying for 2020.
Which is interesting, Helen, because, not to interrupt you, because I really do want to hear what you say, but I do. But there is a question we did hear yesterday that Hillary is leaving the door open to running again.
I saw that. But, you know, I was a big supporter of Hillary's in many, many elections here, too, when I lived here. And I don't really believe it.
I'm going to bring this down because you have.
I don't really believe it. And I'm a big supporter of Hillary's, and I've been to a lot of things with her. And when I was in Albany politics, we really worked hard for Hillary. But I don't really believe that she's going to run. And I'm not even convinced that Biden is going to do it.
But why does she even open the door? Why does she keep it open? I mean, I understand, like, the want. Like, oh, I came – like, I won the popular vote. Okay. I mean, Al Gore went through this
yeah.
in 2000. But.
Well, I think there's a lot of regret. You know, if she had only done it last time, imagine the whole world.
I think there's a lot of regret for voters.
That's
too.
Right, but the whole world would have been different. And I think, you know, that plays on your mind. And then you see Joe Biden, who's older than she is, who's saying, well, hey, I might very well get out there and run myself. And I was on a plane recently with a lot of his staffers who were talking as if nobody else was in the plane, you know, about what they're planning for him. And they really are serious about running him.
Sure.
So if he might be the putative candidate, maybe she does have a chance. I don't know, but I just don't see it happening.
Could I just ask you, because I really don't know the answer to this, what does the word putative mean in this case?
It means an attributed.
Hmm.
The thing you might think.
Okay. You know, we talk a lot about Trump's not narcissism. How else can you explain Hillary even still being on the stage to the degree that she's still on the stage? Because it's not just that she did not win the election. She clearly, we know she had more popular votes. So, you know, you can feel all of the range of emotions for her and what she must be thinking. On the other hand, she is so reviled is too strong. People, generally speaking, even some on the Democratic side, don't like her. And they don't like her or her husband. And they believe that she's been on the stage too long. And she knows that. And in my opinion, her being out there right now is not a help to the Democrats. She should be away from the stage because she just reminds people of why they didn't vote for her.
I should be, shouldn't be. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you get a chance, you're a politician, and you get a chance to be president of the United States, you want to be president of the United States. This is a woman who's walking around severely wounded.
100%. If you think we were shocked in 2016, imagine the way she felt in 2016.
And this is a potential way to get back and to say, okay, this justifies everything. Look, he knew he had a problem with her. The last thing he wanted was her back in the race because that's why he vilified her. And that's why lock her up and playing that with all of the. After all, she won the election in terms of popular votes.
Well, Senator Warren is, of course, you know, moving around in the background in D.C. and talking about maybe her plans for the next presidential election.
What do you think about that?
That might be a reason for Hillary, you know, staking a little bit of terrain at this time in case she needs it.
But, you know, there is no strong Democratic leader in the nationally at this point.
We don't have one. That's exactly right. And that's why I think people like Hillary are coming back up and saying, hey, you know, why not talk about my own candidacy?
Nature abhors the vacuum. You
know, I think Biden is the one. I'm not saying he should run, will win, and will run or will win, but I think he would fit the bill that you're saying is missing right now.
Well, we old white guys, Ira, maybe Jewish white guys, you and I, just to identify for the purposes of identification who we are, we like Biden. I like Biden a lot.
I do too.
And I'm not sure, I'm not so sure that we are representative of what the totality of the American people are feeling right now.
Well, I'd like to learn a lot more about Kamala Harris because she interests me.
Yes.
I like what I've seen of her. And I don't know whether she has, as they say, the gravitas to run nationally, but I'd like to see more about her.
Hey, Oprah's thinking about running, too.
Oh, no.
Oh,
she'd give everybody a car.
I thought she said
she
shut the door.
No, I think that there's in the last couple of days, we've heard other things.
Oh, maybe wow.
She's campaigning for
Abrams
today.
Yeah, but I'd
vote for her in a New York second. I think she'd be great. Anyway, let me just say to go to James, who said NPR reporting. I agree with that NPR's across the country reporting has been poor. And if we want real man on the street reporting, we need Wally Ballou to get real interviews.
Yep.
How long has Wally Ballou has been around?
There's, Bob and Ray.
There's another demographic switch.
Yeah. Bobby and Troy says, dear panel, the WNYT poll done the other day, 600-plus participants, gave 44 for Faso, 44 for Delgado, with 6 points to third-party candidates. Still a dead heat. The Monmouth poll, which gives Delgado a 5-point lead, used that special model which predicts a Democratic wave of voters. I don't think that the pollster should do that. Just the facts, ma'am. A lot of news reports of the poll, unlike WAMC That's the Bobby's language, not mine. Unlike WAMC, did not mention that special model was used. Important distinction. Go, Antonio. Well, you know, and I had DeFaso here yesterday. We did three programs. A lot of it made the news. And, you know, he says, and I agree with him, it's a very, very close race. And he said it wouldn't be a close race if Hillary was the president. He'd walk in.
And it might not be a close race were there not third party candidates.
Yeah, really.
Well,
that
is
makes
something.
A big difference.
It does, Helen, and it has been bothering me ever since this has been announced. I just don't understand. It's Diane Neal, is that
yes,
her name?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't understand it. At the beginning, she was polling at 6 points, and Faso was winning by 1 point. And you really got to wonder, considering that in the debate that we put on here, she was very adamant about her anti-Trumpian views and all the rest of it. So you really do have to wonder whether what she's really all about. I know I do. What's interesting is in this new poll that Bobby from Troy is talking about, she drops significantly
in terms of,
I think as people get the understanding of what their vote could do here, it is going to make a huge difference. And by the way, Bobby may be right. Maybe that's not the way to do polling, but I think it is.
You know, I'd like to ask you two political scientists what the value of polling is in terms of election coverage. Because in the media, we kind of agonized over covering things as a horse race. What's the value of polling?
And we were criticized for covering it.
Exactly.
I think it brings an excitement to the race. I mean, the American people are used to thinking of it as a horse race. That metaphor, as you know, has been used for so many decades. And so they're used to that. They want the competition. They don't really want to hear about the issues. So if you talk about it as who's up, who's down, particularly from one day to the next, at least you're giving them something they want to hear.
And my take on this is people want to know. We know, and I've mentioned it before here, I think today, that there's always this business about the bandwagon effect. You want to be on the side of the winner. So if the poll is going to tell you who's going to win, it becomes very important whether your person is ahead or behind. It also has the possibility, however, of getting an awful lot of people off their behinds to vote. If you think it's a real close race, you might really go out. And we know that happens in these races.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We have one more letter, and then we have to take a break.
Okay. John says, panel, if Democrats take the House, I believe Trump will work with – oh, boy. I believe Trump will work with them to pass immigration and health care reform. He only cares about wins, not how he gets them. John, let me tell you, that is a very dangerous assumption. The reason I say that is that a lot of people, when Trump won, said he's going to become a conciliator, he's going to do what's good for the country. It turns out he had no such plans. And I think to project into a potential, House victory for the Democrats, this would be a big mistake.
Well, but here's for the political scientists in the House. Let's presume that the House turns over and Trump wants to be a conciliator and all of a sudden wants to be a compromiser and all of a sudden all these things get passed that then Trump can run on. So the Democrats have got the decision, if my theory is right, either cooperate with this guy so we can get some things done or become obstructionist because we don't want to let him go to the general election showing all of these things he's accomplished.
I have to take it. Go ahead.
Okay, very, very quickly. All right. Remember. I'll remember.
Don't worry, don't forget. We got to go to a break. Because if I don't go to the break, then we won't have a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, Helen DeFossis. I love seeing you over there. It's just great to have you back. And you'll be here tomorrow, too, by the way. I should mention that. So we're very excited that
That's
always.
Right. always
and Alan Chartok, of course. Alan, right before we went to break, you were going to quote
George
us George W. Bush.
Yeah. Who would Ira advanced a very rose-colored glasses, in my mind, view of what might happen if the Democrats and Trump got together so that both of them would profit. And I say that ain't going to happen because this guy, Trump, has bragged to everybody about how he won. He said he's the divider. He said he always has to have an enemy. He's used all of those terms. And he's not going to change his character because, as Freud said, character is
destiny or something.
No? Character is established by the time we're 4 years old, and this guy's way after that.
And one more note on the New York 19 race. You may have seen John Faso on the air last night with Chris Cuomo. Now, here is the son of a former governor and the brother of the current governor. And he not once but twice said that the New York 19 was in Western New York.
No.
Yeah. And I'm thinking the old saw that I talk about all the time is that you can write the best story in the world, and you make a mistake like that, and it throws everything mm-hmm. else that you talk about or write in doubt. And it was just so blatant. I was shocked that he did not know where New York 19 was.
Well, you know, Ira, and you know how I love you. But I have to say that's big for you. But I don't think it's big for everybody else.
Well, people outside of New York 19 probably could care less. But nevertheless, you want to be accurate if you're a journalist. Yeah. You want to be accurate if you're taking a stance on a variety of issues, which he does. And that kind of mistake puts everything in doubt.
And I think you make a fine point, given that his father was the governor of the state and his brother is the governor of the state.
I want to say in reaction, I'm a big Chris Cuomo fan.
Oh, I'm not. Okay.
So my son went to school with him. Fan. Boys no, Academy, no, Princeton.
I don't like
I
him.
I wish I was built like him, but other than that.
I like him. Okay. Anonymous says, misleading headlines and misleading president don't explain the active duty troops and National Guard can only be used in logistical positions. Huge waste of money for optics to defend us from exhausted, frightened, desperate people 2 months from now. Hey, optics with this guy, this president is what it's all about.
And optics in time for the midterm election.
Sure.
Because the fact that those people aren't going to get across the border for a couple more, months?
If at all.
If at all, and a lot of them are backing off. That's not the point. The point is to get them as an election issue right now between now and
November 6th. And,
you know,
there's 4 more days. Who knows what kind of optics we're going to see.
That's right. Weekend.
And William writes, yes, Trump lies, but none of them has been as significant, deceptive, or egregious as Obama's "you can keep your doctor," in quotes. The ACA was passed with repeated lies.
Gosh.
I have a feeling that we've got about 6,000 lies, and we could come up with at least a handful that were as egregious as that.
Okay.
By the way, you talked about optics. How about the optics of those old movies in the early 1900s when the huddled masses were showing up at Ellis Island as immigrants seeking a better life? And now the only thing that's changed between now and the caravan is the location and the mode of transportation.
Well, the race.
Well, yes, but also that's all true, Ira. And I don't want to be supportive of Trump's position a whit, but I do want to say that the people who came to Ellis Island were doing it the legal way, right?
Well, these people who are—I mean, are you suggesting that this 2,000 or whatever number are going to get to the border and try to storm the gates? That's
no,
what Trump is suggesting.
I certainly am
so
not.
No, so I'm suggesting that they're going to try to get over legally.
Well, they're already trying. They're already getting.
Well, no, that's a very good point, Ira.
Trying to be processed.
Ira, I'm going to agree with you. That's what it is. What Trump won't allow them to do is to do it the legal way.
Yeah, and he's painting them as villains before they're even there, so that the public will think that they're not trying to get in illegally.
Yeah, because it's useful to paint them as villains between now and November 6th. After that,
and they're dark-skinned and helpless, and they can't fight back.
And our wonderful friend Sally, who's always so wonderful to WMC. What about young Joe Kennedy? I think he could win.
I don't know.
There's another. You're going to go to the Kennedy well again.
Really? Yeah, there are a lot of wells in
Remember when the Republicans thought that they could go to the Bush well the last time?
Yeah.
People didn't buy it.
Well, and they might have had it not been for Trump.
Well,
but that was
it might have been
the quote unquote normal political structure. Bush probably would have gotten the nomination.
Yes, if the universe was shaped differently.
Well. When you think of how we were covering that race in 2016 with all those Republican candidates went on for months and months, it didn't seem like anybody was emerging for a long time. And then all of a sudden, a lot of the competitors fell away.
We learned a lot about who the Republicans were.
We did.
Anne said, what happened in 2016? The DNC utterly failed to understand that a massive number of people wanted an outsider because they thought traditional politicians were answerable only to corporate money in the 1%, not the 99%. I talked to many Republicans who said they would vote for Bernie over Trump but would never vote for Hillary. Fair or not, that's what they said. And I hear that. And I think, retrospectively, although, again, the shape of the universe might have been different, that Bernie might have won. Because people were looking for an outsider.
Yeah, but he was so far from even the starting line for so long.
Well, look at who.
And then he came, you know, rushing in from behind. But I don't think he would have ever caught up.
Well, look who won.
Yeah.
He was pretty outrageous.
Trump would have had a field day with Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie is no Donald Trump.
I don't agree with any of you. Joe says crimes. Good morning, panel. I think any discussion about Trump running has to be tempered with the obvious crimes he may soon be charged with. Joe from Hatfield. Well, you know, folks, we haven't seen a thing from Mueller yet. We have seen certain evidence that makes my heart go a little too fast. And one of them was, Rosenstein,
yes,
going into the White House and emerging with their arms literally around each other with the president. And the announcement that Rosenstein would be staying. And one only has to wonder what was said in the Oval Office that day that made Trump so positive about Rosenstein.
That's right.
Well, that's one of the things we need to be watching. And we've tended to forget the Mueller business in the light of what's gone on the last couple of weeks. But right after this election, is Trump going to fire the attorney general and bring Lindsey Graham in as his new attorney general? Is he going to fire Mueller?
Not if he gets the results he wants. I believe Roger Stone,
will be
convicted of something and indicted for something.
Yeah.
Whether the president is so treated is another whole story. Okay. So anyway, Reed says, post-midterm, regardless of what happens Tuesday, I think it is a foregone conclusion that the administration will immediately move to disband the special counsel or bury the report. We were just talking about that. What ordinary citizens do in response will determine how, if this country moves forward, the Congress will not lead in the interim. You know, Helen, I taught political science 101 for a lot of years, and one of my greatest mistakes was, well, we used to go through the Constitution. I used to say, hey, the day that somebody wins in the Electoral College but loses in the popular vote, people will be out on the street with their pots and pans. Wrong.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more stories to discuss and letters to read, and we will do all of that. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. To the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. And let's go around the room. Alan Chartok is here, Helen DeFosses, Ira Fussfeld, and Judy Patrick.
Good morning.
Let's go to the letters, and then we got some more, and then we'll go on to other stuff.
Okay. As Susan writes to us, Hillary, Ira, name me one woman alive who has Hillary's accomplishments. Yes, the Clintons have their faults, but she has been demonized for 30 years and is still standing. And Kamala Harris is not, and that's capital N-O-T, not Hillary Clinton. And that's from Susan.
I voted for Hillary. I like Hillary, generally speaking, but I think her time has passed, and now it's time for new blood and fresh blood.
How old is Kamala Harris?
52, I believe.
52.
That's the thing I love about Ira. He knows everything.
He does. He does. But Kamala Harris is very impressive on these panels that she's on.
Yeah, she is.
She's well-spoken. She comes from a big, big state, you know, which should give her a considerable base. But I haven't heard any mention of her as a possible candidate.
They've been lumping in roughly four women, Harris, Warren, Gillibrand, and I don't think Hillary's the fourth. There's another one.
There's someone else.
So Helen, you know, you were a New York State politician for a long time. You know a lot of people. What do you think about Gillibrand's chances?
She hasn't taken that kind of strong
role
in the United States Senate. I mean, we don't hear that much about her. And again, I speak as someone who lives in Washington, for whom the local government news is what's happening down the street in the Capitol. We don't hear much about Gillibrand. Now, that may turn around. She may be getting it in gear now, but she's young also.
Did she not pledge during the debate with Farley? Is that who she's running against? I can't remember the name of the person she's running against, but she pledged she was not going to run for president.
She did.
I mean, we don't hear about her in that context. Okay.
You know, I hate to say it, but I don't think this country's ready to elect a woman. After what happened with Hillary, it's sad to say. But,
oh, my God. How long are we going to be saying that? It's so embarrassing.
Well, you see the differential in the polls between the men and the women. I mean, you know, in my opinion, this is my opinion, the women are on the right side all the way, and then the men are just, you know, dragging back.
So the first name that would come to my mind looking at both parties would be Nikki Haley.
Well,
and she's pretty good.
And I think she's positioning herself. And she's a Republican woman. And that, you know, with Margaret Chase Smith, she was the first one that came in through my home state, Maine, right?
But she's never
And her husband died, et cetera, et cetera. But Nikki Haley, I think, would be
a plausible
candidate. Oh, she
conducted herself extremely well.
And she conducted her exit interview with the president very, very well.
She did.
She kept a big smile on her face.
And the timing of her departure right after the Khashoggi thing broke suggests in a lot of people's mind that she saw what Trump was going to do and did not want to be part of that.
So Rachel writes, Hillary Clinton, hi panel, love the panel, but enough with the Hillary bashing. You are quoting the opinions of a few misogynistic GOP members in Fox News. If these are the opinions of everyone. And also, she is not still on the stage. She makes statements every now and then. You know what? I want to hear what she has to say. And as the only female general election candidate in this country ever, stop tearing her down. It looks terrible to the little girls out there with political aspirations. I don't see anyone similarly trying to vilify Al Gore. He got the Nobel Prize. Or Mitt Romney, he gets to stay in politics. Or Newt Gingrich, he gets paid to spew bile. I wish everyone would self-reflect and stop tearing down strong women. Also, if you want to excuse your misogyny by advocating for Kamala Harris, who is excellent, please pronounce her name correctly so it does not sound like you are throwing her in just to sound less anti-women, and that's from Rachel.
What? Well, how should we pronounce her name?
Is it Kamala?
Is it Kamala?
I think so. There is a different pronunciation.
Well, good. I stand corrected. I mean, I want to learn more and more about her because I think she really has a growing influence.
And I sure wouldn't call you misogynist, Helen DeBossi.
Well, I would hope not.
And nor I, by the way.
Yeah. Nor
Although
you.
She seems to be interpreting if she's referring to what I was saying.
Well, there are those people who see everything.
But the other thing, too, is I would disagree also on the fact that Al Gore was not vilified after the 2000 election. I think he was completely vilified.
And down for the count
and not allowed to run in 2004.
Yeah, the inventor of the Internet.
Well, you know, if we're a country that allows all of these wealthy celebrities to step forward and say, I can run for president, then why not former presidential candidates being celebrities? I mean, Hillary is a celebrity. You know, she's a celebrity in her own way, and of course she's going to appear.
Well, but she was a celebrity by being a politician and being a government person, as opposed to Donald Trump, who was in reality show.
Right, but I'm just saying that once you're no longer, you know, say on the front lines of presidential candidacy, you can still be making a lot of statements and affecting a lot of attitudes as a celebrity.
And she's a role model for many.
Yes,
women.
I find her a role model.
But, okay. But the fact is, based on what I'm hearing and reading, she is generally considered to be toxic politically right now. And to the extent that she is remaining out there, it could be hurting her party going forward.
Okay. And right now, CNN is running a story that said the rabbi at the synagogue told Trump that hate speech led to the massacre. Now, I heard the rabbi earlier today, and I was disappointed because it wasn't that hate speech by the president led to it. It was hate speech all around that led to it. And, you know, he did greet the president, and he did offer sanctuary to him at the point, political sanctuary, at the same time that all these other politicians were saying, no, I will not go there and be with you when you do this. This is not a time for you to show up. So I was not a big fan.
And he tweeted yesterday a couple of times, Trump talking about how he felt slighted or he was disappointed in how people reacted to him. And he had made this magnanimous gesture. I mean, he went there on a condolence call, and it became all about him, as is typical.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to Thomas' comment. Make no mistake about it, a younger Democrat or Democrats will emerge in the next year to run for president just as surely as it has happened before, Obama 2008, Clinton in 1992, going back further, Carter, Kennedy, all people who were in their 40s when they won the presidency. Democrats, though, most definitively the voters, it is time for a change. And that's Tom in Catskill. And Stephen said, ideal presidential candidate, I'm 66. My ideal candidate would be 45 to 55 years old enough for experience, young enough to take on the job. Gillibrand, maybe? And that's from Steve. And Richard Shores, Richard says, Hillary. I voted for Hillary for president 3 times, but just talk of her running again will likely drive Trump's poll numbers significantly higher. And John says, roundtable question. Speaking of the effect of third-party candidates, do you think that open primaries would lessen the polarization of the two main parties? My thought is that the independents could make the difference in the primaries, requiring the candidates to appeal more than to the base. And John from Greenwich, in my state of Massachusetts, we do have open primaries, basically. You can be a... an unregistered voter and take a ballot in either primary. I think it works quite well. You're right about that. And Sue says, NPR interviews, we have to find an answer to what has happened for people to change. It is of interest to hear someone say, I voted for Trump and will again, even if what has been done is raised, the tax bill, environmental regulation, immigration, we have to listen. And let's see here. And Jacob says, Bernie, the DNC needs to have learned its lesson for 2016. We cannot have any pre-coronation of insiders. Didn't Bernie win New Hampshire, but for the superdelegate count? So how can he be said to have been behind from the beginning? And Carol says, expenses exposed. Do you know who picks up the expenses of all Trump's campaign jaunts on Air Force One? I wish we could see an ongoing tab for his numerous trips. Also, how much will it cost for the military to meet at the border? I think seeing the enormous expense would be an eye-opener. I'd also like to see monetary accounts compared to previous expenses from past administrations. Let's answer the first question first. Do you know who picks up the expense for all of Trump's campaign jaunts on Air Force One? Well, the way this has happened for both Democrats and Republicans, folks, is that what they do is they find an official function, usually at the same place that they're going for campaign
open
purposes.
Open a monument or do something.
Yeah. So, not always, but I think that that's quite frequently the way that they cover that. And Russ says, I have to take issue with Dr. Shartok regarding the legal status of immigrants arriving at Ellis Island. They were legal because at the time when there were no laws applying to their status, and when the laws were passed in the 20s, many did become illegal. And that's Russ from Menands. And Mary said, we marched after the election just because, but by the way, that if you think about it for a minute, that did allow them to come in legally, not illegally. In other words, there was no law keeping them out. So I'm sorry I'd take issue with that. Mary says, just because we weren't banging pots and pans, you're saying Women's March wasn't a protest against the Electoral College's disastrous vote. Well, Mary is somebody who was there. And very much involved in it. It happened, and then it wasn't happening, you know, anymore. You know, you need sustenance to be able to.
Yeah, but it seems to, I think we talked about this last week. It seems to me that that really was an important springboard, and that the enthusiasm among women and men has remained, and it's building up, and there are more people organizing, there are more people canvassing, and we'll see on Tuesday whether it's paid off.
I was just about to say the same thing. We'll see on Tuesday. And also the old expression, from your mouth to God's ear.
Yeah.
Okay. And here we go.
Let's hope.
And Aaron says, clearly the old white guy who should be the nominee for the Democratic Party in 2020 is Bernie Sanders, still the most popular politician in the country. And in my humble opinion, the only nominee that will be able to beat Trump, don't you see?
The most popular based on what
poll? Don't you see? Right.
How old is Bernie?
He's my age, something like 77.
Who says he's the most popular politician? Where did that come
from? She did.
Yeah, she did. There's no attribution to that.
I don't know that.
Well, okay. there are so few of these universally recognized Democratic political leaders right now, like you were saying. that's still being played out, and it's being played out in the background. People aren't aware of it. So Bernie, you know, everybody's glad to see him because they know who he is, but we don't know how to evaluate the other ones yet.
Jeannie says Lindsey Graham is AG. According to Dallas Morning News, Lindsey Graham got a lot of that Russian oligarch money funneled, I'm so sorry to him, last election, as did Scott Walker, Mitch McConnell, and others in the GOP. If Graham becomes attorney general, it is the end of the Mueller investigation. I wish justice was more important than politics. Well, let's just hope Mueller gets off the dime and finishes his investigation before that happens.
They say he's rushing. You know, rushing to get some things done.
Well, and it's also been very quiet. We don't hear much from Giuliani for quite a while.
No, for a long time.
And so, whatever happened to Rudy
Giuliani? I think that suggests that something is going on between the White House and the Mueller investigation very quietly now. It's off the front pages where it belongs. And so I do think they're nearing the end.
You think I might have had a point when I was talking about the Rosenstein visit to the White House?
I don't know how to read that.
Mm. Okay.
So as a caravan of migrant families heads towards the United States, the president said that he was bringing out the military for a national emergency, but he has filed no proclamation declaring a national crisis yesterday before going to Florida, saying that he would commit 10 to 15,000 troops to the border. Meanwhile, he also, Donald Trump, the president, says that he wouldn't be surprised if George Soros is funding the caravan and then offers no proof of that, which is fairly standard in such proclamations
from
the president.
But, you know, that's something new that I've been noticing in the newspapers and on TV, is the media constantly calling Trump on lies. Now, for a long time, they allowed him to say whatever he wanted to say. But now, in the newspapers also, they say there's no basis for this statement. There's nothing to back this up. There's no evidence. And is that that seems like a surprising thing, and a new thing, that they're calling him on every single time when he doesn't have the evidence to back up what he's saying.
Well, I'm a regular watcher of CNN. As much as I can, and they've been doing it for quite a while.
Well, now your local newspapers are doing it. You know, I mean, it's just a surprise. Or maybe it's universally accepted now.
Well, you know, Judy, we haven't heard from you for a long time. What do you think?
Well, you know, the media has been trying to do this all along, but at some point people only hear the first part of the sentence. And one of my issues is maybe we should start really downplaying what he says when he's not telling the truth.
Well, that would help.
Well, how do you do
it?
Well,
I
don't
know.
Don't cover it.
Or put it at the bottom. You don't make it the lead. You know, every lie he tells doesn't have to be an outrageous front page story.
Right, that's right. That's right.
And I just think that the press, the print press, and to the extent that they can do it in broadcast where they have less time to turn it over, recognizes that they've become, or they have been, a microphone and a stenographer.
Yes,
and their job is not to be a stenographer. Uh-huh. Their job is to report. And if Trump says tomorrow is Saturday, when all of us in the room know tomorrow is Friday, then the press has an obligation to say Trump said it was Saturday, but it's not Saturday. It's Friday. Look at the calendar.
Right.
So that's sort of a juvenile way of describing the problem. But I think there has been an evolution. We've talked about it among ourselves for a long time. Newspapers almost never use the word lie.
It just was never a word.
Well, that's changed.
That's changed over time.
Yeah. But recently, that's the word.
And
the
now
word
he's
used.
The Home Office for lying.
Yeah. And the word, I mean, I think the word that I see most often used about Trump is fear. You know, the politics of fear. Mm-hmm. And that's a scary concept, too, if you're a citizen, if you're a political scientist, if you're somebody massing at the border. The fact that that is his dominant orientation, and he's good at it.
And he says so.
He's excellent. Yes.
Yeah, he says so.
Yeah, he's clear about it.
You know, there was substantial criticism of the media last week when we started to report the birthright issues.
Yes, which is
because early on, especially the first stories, talked about quoted him as saying, I can do this by executive order, and didn't challenge him enough on it. So there is a tendency in the industry to say we've got to slow down a little bit about retweeting these tweets, or to put them in context, to not rush, although you know the competitive news.
Well, it's not just competitive, it's just the playing field of media including social media and print and cable and broadcast. It's so wide that this gets out there, and it puts people who believe they're a little bit more responsible in a difficult position.
Don't you think when Trump lies that he knows he's going to get called on lying? Don't you think that this is just one more way that this insufferable narcissist is going to call more attention to himself? He likes it.
I believe in an interview with ABC, and I haven't read the transcript. Just last night, they called him on it, in effect saying you lie so much. And he said, I tell the truth whenever I can.
Yes, yes. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens.
There was another thing that he said that was very telling, too, about... but he said, yes, but it works.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah.
It works. Well, we know what he said to Leslie Stahl, apparently off the air, way back when he first got elected, saying, I vilify you people so that when you write something bad about me, my base will not believe it.
And say, there they go again.
So do we as a society care about truth or not? That's the issue.
Well, that's an interesting point. How is society, Judy, divided up?
We're going to know on Tuesday.
I guess we'll know on Tuesday.
We'll know on Tuesday. Tuesday night. And then maybe Wednesday morning.
Right. Wednesday morning, we'll listen to the panel, and you will tell us.
Are you doing live coverage?
We'll be here. Joe and I will be the anchors.
Yeah.
Right, Joe?
On Tuesday night, and then on Wednesday morning, we'll do the panel live across the street with a live audience.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I forgot. Wow.
And by the way, if you have tickets for that, remember that you do.
We gave them out during the fundraiser.
That's right. They don't have
actual tickets.
It's a will call. That's
so
good.
The downside of that is sometimes when people get things for quote free, although they made donations associated with it,
they say they're
less than. You know, less than proprietorial about showing up.
Now, the last time we had a full house, and we want to make sure we do again. So just remember that everybody.
Or how about letting you know if they can't come?
There you go.
Well,
that's fine,
that's
too.
Right, that's right.
That's
I mean,
fine, too, because we have a waiting list.
I'm sure you do, and I get right on it.
So, Joe, let me ask you this.
We have 10 seconds. We'll go ahead.
Okay, do you think more people will show up if the Democrats win than if the Republicans win?
Well, you know what? We had a full house the day after the...
A lot of people needed...
I think people need a group hug.
Yeah.
That's
right. Good point.
So, all right. My thanks to everybody. We'll be back after this.